Hello and welcome to this episode of the AF Mentors podcast. I have Jules with me. Jules, how are you?
Absolutely wonderful. I'm still on a high from the weekend.
It was so good. Do you know what? The night before, I was a little bit like, this is a weird concept, right? But I was worried because I wasn't very stressed that like I'd maybe not done something or because I didn't, like I didn't do a big sales push towards it. I didn't, I was didn't get there like feeling exhausted. And normally before events, like events are so much harder than you ever expect. And this one was just quite easy. And I was like, oh God, is it easy because I'm now like quite good at doing them, or is it easy because I've done not done something? And I think we often fall for that, like, oh, all this should be hard. And it's like, well, no, like actually, it's probably meant to feel like you're not absolutely drained all the time. Like, this is probably what you wanted, like kind of comes to like actually the first talk, which was yours about like your rich life. Like, sometimes you get almost like used to kind of slogging all the time or working all the time or always being quite high stress. And then when you're not, you almost get like quite anxious about the fact that you're not, because you're like, oh God, am I doing something wrong? When actually, you kind of got to where you want to be.
Yeah, you've just got better at it and you've got used to it. Like, think of how many events you've run now. But I also think that maybe carried on into the vibe of the day, because the whole day was like that and everyone was quite open with each other. There was a lot of chat right from the start. Like, when any of the speakers kind of asked for like feedback or input, they got a lot of it. And I think that
But
maybe
you know what
suited
was
the vibe.
great? There wasn't one talk that finished and it was like, any questions? And there weren't any. Like, that's always really awkward. It's like, okay, well, we'll just get the next speaker on then. And it, but actually there was always people that wanted to talk. And hopefully, like, what helped with that was like setting the vibe at the start. Like, I did a little bit of like, the whole point is I want every single person here to feel heard, to have contributed something to the day, even if that's one comment or one little additional point or asking a question or anything, but I want everyone to feel it, like involved in it. And I think every single person did.
Yeah, I think I heard from everyone at some point in the day.
Yeah. Which
Yeah,
is
it's
pretty
great.
cool. Yeah. All right. So I thought we'd go through the talks and just say some of the key take homes that we got.
Okay.
All right. Well,
So,
we
well,
start. Yours was the first one. What's the key take home that you wanted people to get out of that?
I think not to fall for false signals of success. The because like I said, even when I showed me at my worst when I bumped my head and all this, that wasn't an Instagram versus reality thing. I posted that on Instagram. So people saw me in this absolute state of being burnt out, but yet they were still saying, oh, you're doing so well, you've done brilliant. And I think I did fall into that. Like, not looking at, is the business giving me what I want, but everybody telling me the business is amazing. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah, maybe that. And again, maybe this is just how it is. Maybe if you've got a successful business, this is just how it's supposed to feel. And it's not.
I also think it's really easy, and I've noticed myself doing this to, I don't know, say you get into building your own business really to have control over your time, to stop, just getting paid per hour and start actually getting paid for the value that you contribute and it not always being about the amount of time that you put in. Because realistically, you're always poor in some way if you're paid per hour. To make more money, you have to give more of your time. And like, being rich is actually having freedom of time. But you can get so lost along the way that you're like, oh no, but I have to do this. It's just because I've got a really busy job and a busy life. And this is what I need. I need to take on more clients. I need to do this. And actually, if for a lot of people, it's more successful having 25 clients, living the life that you want, having the balance throughout your life that you want. Then it might be like, having 100 clients. And sure, your bank account would look better, but does your life as a whole look better? And then I think what was interesting about this, because not that it was opposing at all, actually, but it was just like a slightly different perspective, was like Emma's talk was like, she does have not far off 100 clients, right? But that is her rich life. And I know her well enough
Please.
now to know like she absolutely thrives off that. She loves it. She loves her checking. She's got energy for it all. She wants to build something big. She's happy to put in the work now. She's happy to sacrifice other areas of her life. And it's not so, like, the thing is, sacrifice for some people is not for others. It's not a sacrifice for her because she doesn't want to do the other things. You know, she wants to do this more. It's not a sacrifice if you want to do the thing more. And I would say I'm the same, right? Like, a lot of people would look at my life and be like, you've not got very good life balance. But it is actually in line with my values. Like, it's my life balance, right? And I do think about these things. And I do know that I spend much more time working than other people do. But I do also know that I've got this vision and I'm happy to put in the work to get there. But if you're like, okay, but actually I'm really happy where I am with this balance and I don't have this like grand vision, but and I feel like I'm sacrificing things in my life right now for something that might not be worth it to me, then absolutely change that definition of success for you.
I think that's it. It's what do you want out of the business? What do you want this to do for you? And everybody's is going to be different. So some people will be delighted with 25 clients working 30 hours a week. Some people are going to want 80 clients and work much more. It's what does it give you back? And I think that's what a lot of people miss. They think this is what I should build the business into. This is what a successful business is. But no, what do you want out of it? Like, for example, like hen weekends. I know a lot of people that love to go on hen weekends. I do not. So that would not contribute to my rich life, having to go on a hen weekend. But for others, it will. So you've got to think about the same with business. What do you want out of it? Because like you say, some people absolutely thrive off building their business and that's the thing they enjoy. So I think, especially when you start, or even if you're further into business, what do you want out of it? And keep as a whole for your life, not just what do you want out of it financially. What do you want the whole thing to do for your life?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting seeing people's examples of their rich life, like yours is like being able to have a bath on Monday morning, like, yeah, or being able to go for a coffee with my mate whenever I want to. And most people's are something like that.
Mm.
Now, you don't need to be making millions to do that, you know? So then you've got to think, oh, okay, right, that's fine. Part of mine, though, is waking up driven with a purpose that excites me. And I don't get that from having 25 clients, making enough money to live and kind of like, you know, like being able to have a bath whenever I want. Like that to me, and I thought about it afterwards. I was like, that's not my rich life. And it's not to say that it's not absolutely fantastic for other people. But to me, I'm like that drive and purpose part is more important. And that does mean that impacts other areas of my life. But then even with this, and I've been thinking about this quite a lot recently, just like working with different clients or different coaches, and like people have a lot of constraints over their life. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And I think we jump too quickly to, oh, you're having a baby. Oh, that'll obviously mean that business drops. It's like, not really. It really depends where you are, right? As an example, like if I had a kid now, and I remember Maureen asking me this, she's like, do you want kids? And I was like, I don't know, like, big question. Let's like move on from that. But let's say hypothetically I did, right? She's like, oh yeah, but you'd obviously have to change a few things. I was like, I would, but wouldn't stop me growing. And I would be smart about it, especially given, and this is what I mean about like where I am now, I have the resources to outsource a lot of things. So constraints aren't bad at some point. And actually it'd probably be a good thing for me to be like, stop being a control freak and give it, like you have to now get someone else to do that part, get someone else to do that part. And you need to more and more dial in on that 20% of things that actually drives your business. And that will be you and everything else has to be outsourced. But my point is like, the more I get through business and I think the more that you grow, because initially it does all come from you, but the more that you grow and you build a team and stuff, the more that constraints don't on your time don't necessarily matter. They don't have to stop the business growing, right? Like you think about if, I don't know, people who own like, this came up as well, businesses as opposed to basically making their own job.
Yeah, so own a business or a job. Yeah.
Someone asked a question about this. Now, there's obviously like the tax definition of being a sole trader versus having a business, right? But the way that I see a business is, does it run without you? And I was like, I'll be completely transparent. None of mine do. I'm still too involved in all of them. So like, do I have a business? No, I probably have five different jobs. If you're looking at it by that definition, if you look at other businesses, like, I don't know, if Elon Musk took 5 months off, would Tesla die? No, of course not. He doesn't act, you know, he's not actually in there doing the work, running it. And if he is, he's not an integral part to it. You know, like it can work without him. Obviously, I picked the biggest business in the world or whatever, but you know, any business kind of work, like whoever owns Tesco, like there's not relying on one person. It's too big a business to rely on one person. At some point, you don't want your whole kind of business empire to rely on one person.
Yeah, but I think what also I find interesting about that is, and I'm thinking about one of the coaches on EFM who got pregnant, and instead of thinking, oh, this is going to be really bad and impact my business, she was like, huh, I'm going to understand how it is better for mums now. Mm. And she's seen this as a huge advantage to her. And I think, like, you would, if something like that come up or any other challenge that would bring you out of the business, you would quite like that. Because you'd be like, ooh, how did I figure this out? Whereas some people would look at it and be like, oh, disaster. And I think that mindset's got a lot to do with it.
Such a different mindset. I even think, I can't remember if it was you I was talking to or someone else, but I was like, I'd kind of like it if all my businesses failed.
Yeah, because we were talking about, like, if I wouldn't go and get a job, I'm like, I could open a shop or I can make a stationery line. And it's because now we've taken this business building mindset and experience. Well, what happens if all your businesses fail? You just start a new one.
Yeah. Yeah. And once you understand the principles behind each business, okay, there's like, there has to be a problem that you know that people have that you can offer a solution to, right? Whether that's getting great stationery that is in the theme of dogs, right? Or whether it's like solving your problem with your relationship with food. Like it almost doesn't really matter. Like, oh, every business has a formula to it. And once you've got your head around that and you figure that out, like, you could just apply it somewhere else. Now, I'm not saying I want all my businesses to fail, but I've always been, I think a lot of business owners have this like scarcity mindset. And I've always had it to an extent. And I think in some ways it can play in your favors. Like, I set myself up quite well that if all my businesses do fail, I'll be fine to start something else, right? Like, I'll have the capital there to start something else. And I fully think that at some point that will happen. I've always thought that like online coaching will be a bit of a bubble. And realistically, when a lot of your business comes from social media, like, you're somewhat the flavor of the week. Now, you can consolidate that flavor of the week. Like, I like to think that, I mean, initially people followed me for my apps, right? That was always going to be fickle. That was always going to be short term. That's never really, you know, it's not something you want to build a business off. But then, you know, I show a lot of information. I further educate, you know, there's more substance to it than just like, oh, she has apps. Like, even though it might have started like that, that gives you stronger foundations. But you are still somewhat like, oh, you're popular at the moment. I mean, I've been playing off it for 12, 15 years, but it's doing all right so far. But I just do think, like, okay, there will be like a kind of pop to this at some point. But when it happens, like, it'll hurt. And then I'll be like, what's next?
But do you know, I think that also comes from the fact that, right, we're personal trainers, but we also see ourselves as business owners. And this is where a lot of people who own coaching businesses don't see themselves as business owners or people in business. They see themselves as self-employed personal trainers. Whereas because we see ourselves as business owners, we're like, yeah, well, we do this coaching, but we could also, like, you could open a restaurant. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, something.
I would never.
Why? Like, it's one of those things when people open bars and you're like, that's not going to pan out how you think it will.
I think just knowing one of my really good mates owns a tapas bar in Dundee, and it's probably one of the most like successful restaurants. I would say it's probably one of the busiest for sure. And it's won loads of awards. Like, it is amazing, but I just see like the amount of stress that goes into it. And then when I look at like the overheads and the profit margin, I'm like, I think that's the one thing that you forget as an online coach, is like, your overheads are almost nothing. Even if you're heavily invested in like mentorship, career development, like it's nothing compared to paying that amount of rent, that amount of staffing costs, that amount, and you have to pay them whether you make profit or not. You know, like, oh well, I've got coaches that work for me now. I'm like, cool. Well, if I don't have any business, my coaches don't have any business. Thus, they don't make any money, but I don't pay them any money, right? It's not like it, different if you've salaried someone, in which case you're paying them no matter what. But for most people, and the most ways that people take on coaches, like it's always relative compared to what you're making. So if you need to pay them more, it's because they've made you more money. Like, that's not the same as if someone just like works in your restaurant. It's like, oh, no one came in, sorry, you're not getting paid.
Yeah.
Anyway, we went on a bit of a tangent there. So we got to take homes from your talk. Who was after you?
Well, it was Lucy that was after me. And do you know something? I thought about this yesterday. Like, so we had Lucy, who is pretty much all one-to-one, and she has coaches that work for her. Danny and Mimi are basically just in person. And then we've got Laura, who does like group coaching one-to-one. She also owns a gym that she's got a partner with. And then Emma with her 80 one-to-one clients. All really successful. None of them are doing the same thing.
Yeah. All completely different business models, all complete. And this is the other thing that I love about AFM is we're very much like, what's your vision? What's your passion? How do we help you achieve that? Not, hey, this is the AFM model, stick to it, run your group coaching, have some one-to-ones on the side, take on a coach when you get to this and bam. And I get that there's an element of some people would kind of like that. Same as some of your clients want meal plans, right? Because it's like, oh, simple formula to stick to. But long term, it's not what's going to get you results. It's not what's going to help you build a business you love. It's not what's going to help you create for your clients like a life that they love around their diet that suits them so they can stay in shape while not like feeling like they're missing out on things or eating a diet that they don't enjoy. And it might take a little bit more work initially, but it's 100% the right way to do it.
Yeah, I always say that to people when like I've got calls to see if they're a good fit for the AFM. And I'm like, we don't have a set of processes that were like week one do this, week two do that. Everything is literally built from the ground up from you. You tell us what you want to build, what your vision is, and we'll help you get there in the best way for you. We don't have a schedule or a template that we work off of.
Yeah, because every business is completely different. And actually, that was one of the big take-homes from Lucy's talk, and especially that quote that she left with, which was like, you don't need to see the full staircase to take the first step. I had no idea. Like, if someone was like 5 years, you know, people are like, oh, make a 5-year business plan. I couldn't have told you this business plan 5 years ago. Like, have a bit of a plan, know the direction that you're going with, but also go with it. Like, it will change. Everything you build will change. You need like a fundamental start point, and then you're going to adapt based on like how you like to coach, what your client feedback is, what new technology comes along. Like, you always have to be adaptable and you always have to be growing. The Commit to Six that we run now is completely different than the one that I started, and as it should be. Like, I'd be worried if it wasn't after 5 6 years of doing it.
I think that's something that you've got to be comfortable with change if you're self-employed, because it's the only thing that's absolutely guaranteed to you. But things will change, and it's you're not going to work on a business, get it there, and then it's just going to run. You're just going to need to keep changing it forever. And it's actually more like evolution than change.
Yeah, keep evolving it. Otherwise, you're left behind. Same with social media. People are always looking for like the number one lead gen strategy that will always work forever. And it's like, there isn't one. It will always change. Society changes. What people, you know, like a lot of, even if you look at this from the perspective of like what is actually deemed okay to say now, like a lot of marketing campaigns, even within the last like five or so years, you look back on, you're like, whoa, you can't say that anymore. Like, no, or even like your, do you remember when your cute was like not for girls? Like, I mean, that was even quite bold at the time, but like now, that I
You
was
got away with it at the time, you would not get away with that.
no,
York could be out of business.
I mean, I don't think I've seen anyone eat a Yorkie for a while.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah, a bit of a weird chocolate bar, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
Would
not
be
good.
like, oh, do you know what? Most people are like, would you get a Galaxy or a Dairy Milk? They're not like, would you get a Yorkie? Don't
What's your favorite chocolate bar?
know. It really depends on my mood. But I think a basic Dairy Milk, if I just wanted chocolate, yeah.
Mine would be a Bounty. And see when people give
That's
celebrations
gold.
and they slag Bounties, I'm like, I'm going to block you. Don't
Yeah,
slag Bounties.
that's a really bold choice. Yeah. Polarizing.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. And then who was after Lucy?
But look, after this, it was Danny and Mimi. I thought their story was really good.
Those
Very
are
interesting.
hilarious.
They were so funny. Like, their actual presentation was very engaging. But like when they said they spent £1,500 on plants, I was
So funny.
like,
And when they were
what?
like, yeah, so we did the maths and we were like, right, we'll be making 65K a month in profit.
I'm on three.
Yeah, then they were like, turns out that was wrong. But you know what? I think that quote by Ross Edgley, be naive enough to start and stubborn enough not to stop, is so true. Like, had they known that, you know, this would happen in the pandemic, that that would happen, that then this would be shut, and then that would, and it would cost this much money, and this would go wrong, and like, he probably would have never started.
I
And
don't know
if
if
anyone
anyone
did,
would have, like, if you'd known how difficult being a business is, would anyone have started to doubt it?
yeah, but then you just kind of roll with it. It's like, okay, that's the next thing. Okay, fine, that's the next thing.
Yeah. A level of naivety, I think, when you start out, is very helpful.
Yeah, and actually, interestingly, that's why I didn't commit to doing a PhD after my first one failed. Because I was like, I know I'd worked as a research assistant for about a year beforehand. So alongside a lot of PhD students, and I was like, and my mum is a professor, so she has her own PhD students. You know how long it takes. You know that, like, my dad also had a PhD student who, they're meant to be like 3 to 4 years. It's taken him like 7 years and he hadn't even submitted yet. And I was like, it's a slightly different field, right? And loads of things have popped up. But I was like, I am way too aware of how much work is going to be required for this. I just don't want it enough. Whereas a lot of people, I think, start that process like, oh, okay. Yeah. And like, they fully understand it's going to be hard, but I don't think they realize like how common it is to have delays, to have resubmissions, for something to go wrong, to have to, you know, like to prolong things, so blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, even, yeah, it just seems like everything just takes so long. And I hate that stuff. I hate not having control over it either. Saying that, the most impressive thing I ever heard, maybe not ever, no, actually, probably one of my old clients, Hannah Ritchie, did her PhD in less than a year. Insane.
Tracking. How did she do it so quickly?
They had to literally change the rules for like submission at Edinburgh Uni, so that, because normally it's like it has to be 3 years, because she's just at, like, she's written a book now as well, like while also doing her day job. So yeah, I just get up at 4, do 2 hours of book writing, then I go for a big run, then I get on with my day job. I'm like, you have the most insane brain.
But that's her rich life. Because she's probably thriving off that, whereas a lot of people are like, are you kidding me on?
Oh yeah, she absolutely loved it. I mean, complete choice, like loves it, but yeah. I know.
Impressive.
Okay, who was after Danny and
Then
me?
the fabulous Claire telling us all about pre and postnatal nutrition. I was like, wow, the whole time.
It was so good. And
Yeah.
it was a hard one as well. Like, I think Claire and Maureen had quite hard topics because everyone in there is a really fucking good coach already, and most of them are done pre and postnatal, right? So it's like, well, what else are you going to teach us? I learned tons from it.
Oh, loads.
Yeah.
And it's what Claire just thinks this is run of the mill
I know.
stuff. And we were all like, tell us more.
I love
Like,
when
it's
she, like, you know, when
fabulous.
she goes into like midwife mode as well, like, oh,
You
so
get.
real, so confident. Perfectly, like I actually filmed the part where she was talking about creatine, and I thought, oh, she can cut this up for a reel. you know, like, because most people make a few mistakes when they're speaking publicly. Maybe she can just cut them out. I was like, that for a whole 2 minutes was word for word perfect. No ums, no buts, no missing out something and going back to it. I was like, that was very impressive.
I wonder if that comes from when she's in her midwife role, that they've got to be in control of the room. And like we were talking about it over the weekend, about how sometimes in certain situations, she's got to give all of her energy to someone else to pull them through a difficult situation, somebody that's in delivery. And I think just the fact that she would, I've heard her talk about this before, about when there's an emergency situation during a delivery, about how they just boom, 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 just step into action. They're in control. They know what they're doing. And like, because things happen so quickly in like 90 seconds or a minute. And I wonder if that's all part of it, that that's her identity when she talks about midwifery-related things. Because she was totally in control of that room and she had everyone's attention.
I think she was in flow state.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it was very, very good. Who was after that?
Emma was after that, telling us all about her impressive amount of clients. Everyone was like, you've got how many one-to-one clients?
How many one-to-one?
What?
I also just loved, like, she unapologetically works hard.
Mm-hmm.
And as she should, right? But I think a lot of people are kind of like, oh, well, you know. She's like, well, Parkinson's law, like, if you want to get these check-ins done, like, treat it like a job. Get up. She's like, leave my phone out of my room. I'm doing check-ins. Like, this is my job. I'm not posting on Instagram, then messing around and replying to someone. She's like, I'm doing check-ins.
I think that's a really good lesson that everyone could take away from that. Because we all do that, especially if you've come from maybe a corporate job where you've got 9 to 5 and meetings at 10 and everything's scheduled for you. Somebody's waiting on whatever report. Everything's laid out for you. Whereas when you go to self-employment, you can basically do whatever you want, whenever you want. And I think a lot of us do faff about and make a cup of tea and scroll on Insta and watch a wee bit of Grey's Anatomy sometimes. When actually, if you were in a job, you wouldn't be able to do that. So treat coaching the same. You'd probably get much more done in your day, most of us.
Oh, 100%. And the reason I wanted her to talk was to kind of break a lot of people's glass ceilings. Because a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, I'm so busy. I'm like, cool. How's she managing 80 plus one-to-ones, plus having a coach, plus making all the content she makes, plus being a very high-level bodybuilder? Like, okay, she's busy. You absolutely can do it. What was interesting is that even after it, Maureen was like, how does Emma find time to train? And I was like, is this a priority to her? You know, and I think a lot of the time it's part of it is the discipline and structure that comes from bodybuilding. She's able to translate that directly into her business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that same mindset of like, well, like, if I want to stand on stage and win, like, I need to put the reps in now, or I need to make sure that all this is on point. And it's kind of the same with coaching, right? Like, I'm going to make sure that I'm showing up for my clients, that I'm saying that I'll do the things that I agreed to do in our meetings to build my business. Like, she's one of the best coaches for checking in as well, like, always on time. Yeah, she's very impressive.
Yeah, it was. And it was, she's not stressed by it at all.
Yeah.
Like, I feel as if I got the impression that had she had less clients and more free time and less urgency about her day, that she would find that more stressful.
Yeah, no doubt. Now that she's used to that level. Mm-hmm. I also think it's exactly how you want to come across as a coach, and probably why she's such a good coach is, like, you know, completely chill, there, present, focused, even though there's loads of other stuff going on. You know, like, and even like when she was talking about how she speaks to prep clients, like, she might in her head be like, fuck, we need to sort this out. But she'd be like, no, it's fine. That's fine. We'll figure this out. I mean, same with you. It's like, you know, when I come to you with like business fires, you probably in your head, you're like, fuck, we need to figure this out. Then you're like, okay, let's sort it. And you know what? It's exactly what you need to hear from, like, you know, like a co-business owner or like a a coach, whatever, you want that calm, reassuring, okay, well, that's the situation. Let's figure out what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Practice applied. Yeah.
Yeah, she very much came across like that.
And then who did we have?
Then we had Laura Fee, who just could not get to grips with that clicker at all. And it just...
I know.
Everyone loved it when she was actually, this doesn't work.
I know. And I was like, funny that it worked for everyone else, Laura. But anyway, it was a very, very good presentation.
And Laura, I love fixed planes. Like, she was like, used to fix planes. And then she's like, this clicker is broken.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't change a slide, but can make sure that
you're project.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing from hers was the whole, like, just not having failure as an option. Like, and to me, it was more taking away any chance of giving up. Because she failed loads of times. We all do. But it depends how you're defining failure, right? Like, was it a failure, or was it just, I'm going to find a different way to do this? Okay, that way didn't work. Okay, what's next? As opposed to, I'm giving up on the outcome. It's just, we need to take a different route.
I heard something on a podcast this morning and it said failure and success are exactly the same path. Failure's just get an earlier exit.
Mm.
So actually just stay on the same path, and as long as you don't get off that road, you'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
But that's what I took from Laura, is that she tried lots of different things and things didn't work, but she learned from them and took those things that didn't work and built it into something else, and then built it into something else again. And that actually came across from a lot of the speakers, that I tried this, didn't work, so I tried something else, that failure didn't stop them.
Yeah. And I think whenever you look at anyone who's successful, there is normally a load of failures along the way. It's just often that they either haven't shown them, or they happened, like, quote unquote, before they were successful, you know, or before the one thing that did take off for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we had the fabulous Maureen Joyce.
Do you know what? I was sat there, like, so proud. I was like,
she was so passionate.
So good. Lewis texted me halfway through saying, I am so glad that she's coaching my mum.
Aww.
Because his mum's one-to-one with Maureen, and then his sister's on Commit to Six as well.
That's like a huge compliment, though.
But yeah, she just, and again, such a hard, because when I was like, I want you to talk about relationship with food, she was like, well, what am I going to say that Amelia's not said? And I was like, it's probably something completely different. Like, it was a completely different angle on things.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
But I get, like, why it's daunting, because it's like almost every coach in that room has already done EIQ.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's like, what am I going to tell them that they don't already know, without just telling them stuff that they do already know, that, you know, like, what, how can I put this across the different way so people get something from it? And 100% everybody did.
I felt she, instead of, because what I liked was she said, I'm not overly, like, sciencey. And I think she presented it very much from a, like, a personal and emotional point of view. Like, how do you create an emotional connection with someone who is struggling?
And make them feel understood. I think mm-hmm. that was the main thing that stood out to me. It was like, make people feel heard, make them feel understood, make them understand why they're struggling, and that there's nothing wrong with them, but we might need to take a different approach. And then that whole, like, I love the analogy of the leak, you know,
yeah.
Like, rather than just putting a bucket under a leak, like, let's figure out what's actually wrong and fix it once and for all. Yeah, I thought she did incredibly well. And the perfect balance of, I've shown some of my own vulnerability, that I can relate to you, that I have been through this stuff myself, but not, and I've seen this done badly where it's all that. And at the end of the talk, you end up just feeling like, oh, I'm so sorry you've been through such a hard time. But I didn't really get very much from that. Like, as the, you know, like, your talk is meant to be about other people, right?
Yeah.
You obviously pull them in, make it relatable by using your own examples. But like, whenever I present, I'm like, what do I want the audience to come away from this with? Not like, what do I want to offload onto people, right? I'll keep that to therapy. But she did the perfect amount of, like, here's what I've struggled with, here's, like, a bit of vulnerability, but like, also here's the practical take home that I want you to get from this.
Yeah, it's like vulnerability, but with a solution.
Yeah.
And I think this is what coaches forget online. It's fine to tell people that you've made mistakes, that you don't have everything all together, that your training's not perfect, your nutrition's not perfect, but don't present it in a woe is me, this is rubbish for me. It's like, right, here's the mistakes I made. This is where I went a bit wrong. Here's how I'm going to fix it. And people are like, I'll come on this journey with you. Let's go. Because it makes you relatable, but it also puts you in a position of leadership.
I was watching this. It was like one of my clients sent me it. It's a GP sort of CPD program. I was watching some talks last night, and one of them was from a woman who has been through breast cancer and then got pushed through early menopause. And she was saying that, you know, like one of the biggest things for her, because it's such a hard situation to be in when everyone online is shouting about how amazing HRT is, and then you're not allowed to take it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going through the same symptoms. And you kind of, you know, like you'll go to your menopause specialist and they're like, well, you can't take HRT. And it's like, well, right, so what? And she was like, I know that there aren't, you know, there isn't the same specific treatment for me, but like, I just want to feel heard.
Yeah.
And actually, I think we forget, and I certainly do, because I'm so like solution orientated all the time. I have to remind myself, like, okay, some people just want to feel heard, and like, hey, are there some small tweaks we can make? Or even just saying like, that must be so hard for you, as opposed to just like, well, we can't do that, so crack on. Like, you know, and I think the reality is a lot of women kind of understand that to an extent they will have to quote unquote crack on, but you still want like some, like, yeah, basically to feel heard, to feel understood, and like the acknowledgement that it's hard.
Yeah, it's some empathy. Yeah. And then our last speaker of the day was somebody called ESG.
I've never heard of her.
Your talk was so good.
Do you think?
Very practical. Yeah. That's what I like about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted people to like leave with, these are things I can actually directly into my business. Like now.
I think that was a good mix of the whole day. There was some food for thought. There was some storytelling. There was some practical stuff. But yeah, I liked how you could take yours and apply it right. And actually, there's things I've noticed that people did in like sharing the day directly taken from your talk. Mm. So they've actually watched your talk and then went right home on the train and applied it the second they left the room.
Yeah, like I'm spending my Saturday becoming a better coach. Social proof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, it was really good. And I always loved like the socials and getting to talk to people and going for the walks in the morning. Like, yeah, it was a really good weekend. And I'm sure we'll be doing another one not too far off on probably in London.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's just such a nice, a lot of the feedback that I've seen on social sense is how everyone felt very welcome in the room, and everyone felt, and it was very noticeable on the day, like we said earlier, about people being completely comfortable to put their hand up and say something. You knew there was zero judgment, and there was people in there right from having one client up to 80 clients, and just a huge variety of people on different stages of their journey, and everyone was just so open to share stuff.
Yeah, and that's what I really wanted to get across at the start. I was like, there's no egos in here. I don't care if you've got 200 clients on your group coaching or you've not got a client yet. Like, I want to hear from you. You've got stuff to share. You've got stuff to teach other people. And I think that, like, it is really, like, encompasses our whole, like, vibe on AFM. It's not like, oh, that person can't say anything because they've only got this much following or blah, blah, blah. It's like, we don't care. Like, we care about you as humans and the direction you want to go in, and what, like you're saying in the start, what success looks like to you. Yeah. Yeah. I got a lovely message after that was like, just want to say thank you to everyone today. The AFM community has honestly saved me and my love for my business. To be in a space of humans striving to be better coaches and create meaningful impact over striving just to earn X a month is what I've needed. You're all legends. And that's from someone who's been on numerous other mentorships. So it kind of meant like a lot, you know?
If I wasn't part of AFM, all of that on socials would have made me want to join.
Yeah. Do you know what? Also, shout out to Carol, who came on her own, didn't know anyone. Like, I think, yeah, and the way that everyone was just like, oh, come and sit here. Like, what do you do? Like, she, by the end, she had like freaking 60 odd mates bopping around, and like within 24 hours. But that's the kind of event, like, if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, I'd like to come to the next one, or even if it's not that event, but you'd like another event, like, oh, I want to go to IFS, or I want to go to, but I'm just a bit worried about not knowing anyone. Well, if you are, for example, going to IFS, you don't know anyone, message me before. I will make sure that you have friends.
Yeah. And that's the whole vibe of AFM, like on masterminds. Nobody sits on masterminds thinking, oh, I can't share that. Everybody's quite happy to ask a question or be like, oh no, I've got something that'll help with that. Right, I'll send you it. We're like, send it to us as well, please.
Yeah. We're always learning. Half time I'm like, oh yeah, send me that.
Oh, like that after the weekend, it's made me think about loads of different things about what I want to do. Like it's such a vibe of, it really is that a rising tide lifts all ships.
Yeah.
Like we all, everyone in that room got something out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
All right, then. If you're inspired to take some action and join AFM, you can head over to the website, afmentors.com, fill in the application form. If you're a good fit, then we'll book in a call and have a little bit of a chat about how we can help you build your business. All right, bye.
Bye.